What an incredible, incredible day. Just under 450 volunteers carrying out 36 projects throughout our city, impacting people of almost every background imaginable inside of Hoboken. It was amazing. Would you guys just celebrate with me, those who were part of that yesterday? We started off the year and we asked a question: what could God do with 1,000 people sold out to his message and mission? And as we came to the end of the day yesterday, I thought, this is just a taste. Like, this is just the beginning of what's possible. Of what's possible when people begin to be sold out to loving God and to communicating his love to the world around them. If today's your first time with us, we're really excited to have you. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And I want to clear something up before we go any further, because so many of you have asked me the question over the past 2 days. And it is true. Over the weekend, I joined the Marines. The whole pastor thing just wasn't working out the way that I thought. And so decided, no. I went in and it just came out a lot shorter than I expected. What can I say? It happens to all of us. But we're really excited to have you, because right now we're in the middle of this conversation called rest. And for the past couple of weeks, we've been working through, okay, how do we begin to resolve the unrest in our soul? And we've been looking at how we so desperately try to find rest, and we do so through all these things out here, but there's this turmoil, there's this unrest in our soul that, because we can't resolve it, it makes it impossible for us to find meaningful, lasting rest that we can maintain, that we can sustain in any way. And yet at the same time, Jesus has come to us with this promise, where he says in Matthew chapter 11, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." But not just external rest. "Take my yoke upon you, let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light." He's come to us and said, I can bring rest to your soul. I want for you to know what it is to have your soul come to rest. And we've been looking at how he does that, and how his invitation to this rest is an invitation to come and to sit with him. And we've been trying to develop this habit where, when the turmoil begins to erupt in our soul, when that unrest begins to develop, that we begin to sit, rather than moving faster, that we stop and we sit with him. How's it going? How's it going? I want to ask you again. I want to consistently ask you throughout this conversation. I don't want it to be something that we just talk about once and then move past. No, this is a habit that we need to develop in our lives, that we learn to sit with him. And he calls us to sit and to experience this rest, not as something that he gives, but actually the byproduct of his presence in our lives. That this is the result of his consistent presence in our lives. He calls us to experience in him that rest. And then he begins to teach us and instruct us in how he can bring rest, and how he wants to bring rest into all these other areas of life. As a matter of fact, a lot of this passage is about his teaching and about his instruction. We don't see it because we don't understand the terminology that he's using. But when he says to them, "Take my yoke upon you," what he's talking about there is his teaching or his instruction. When a rabbi would teach his disciples, the rabbi's theology, or the rabbi's understanding of God, or the way that the rabbi taught that you approach God, that was called his yoke. His set of teachings, his understanding, his theology was called his yoke. So when Jesus says, take my yoke upon you, what he's saying is, if you listen to what I'm teaching you about who God is and how you experience and how you approach God, he says, if you'll take on what I'm teaching you about this, he says, it's going to bring rest. This idea of yoke, it's his teachings of who the Father is. And so not only does he want us to experience the rest that his presence brings to us, but then he's teaching us about how he can bring rest into these different areas, including what we talked about last week, which is probably one of the most unrestful areas of our life where there's so much turmoil, this area of relationships. And if you weren't with us last week, we talked about the reality that loneliness is not so much the result of solitude as it is the result of not being known. And we live our lives hiding, we live our lives behind this mask, and we live our lives, for many of us, in the midst of a crowd, in the midst of many, many relationships, but very, very alone, very, very lonely, because we're not known. We feel like we're constantly having to hide. And we feel like if we're actually known, we won't be valued. But then Jesus has stepped in and said, no, not only do I want you to come and sit with me and experience the rest that my presence brings, but he says, I want for you to be known by me and to know and to experience that even though I know about the ugliness, I still value and love you. And we talked last week about the powerful way that he brings that value into our lives, the powerful way that he allows us to be known, for us to begin to move out of that loneliness. But his teachings don't just impact our relationship with him, and he doesn't just want to impact our relationship with him. There's more to it than that. He also wants to impact our relationship with one another. As a matter of fact, this whole thing that he starts called the church, it's not just about our relationship with him, it's about our relationship with one another. And when you begin to experience sitting with him and being known and valued by him, it changes your heart towards the people around you. It begins to change your heart towards the people around you. It begins to change the way in which you interact with their ugliness and their brokenness. There's a really powerful passage in 1 Peter that I think is connected directly to this and what we're talking about in Matthew chapter 11. It's found at the very end of the book of 1 Peter. And at the end of the book of 1 Peter, Peter says something very unique. I want to take you to it. Throughout the book, he's been talking to them about love and how they should love, not only the people who love them, but the people who hate them, the people who are against them. He's talking about all the crazy ways that he's calling them to love. And then he comes to, or as he's coming to the end of the book, he says this, 1 Peter 4:8, most important of all. So he's nearing the end and he says, most important, listen, pay attention. Most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other, which we expect. We expect, because he's been talking about love the whole time. But then he says this. He says, for love covers a multitude of sins. He says, most important of all, pay attention to this. I want you to continue to love one another because love covers a multitude of sins. What in the world is he talking about? I've sometimes heard this passage taught that this means that we just kind of overlook sin, that it's not that big a deal. But that can't be what he means when you look at the rest of the book. Listen to what he says in chapter 2. He says, for you are free, yet you are God's slaves, so don't use your freedom as an excuse to do evil. He's not saying that sin doesn't matter. And for some of you who are here, I want to clarify this, because you're wondering, what sin, what in the world does this mean? And so often it's misunderstood. Many times people think that sin, they have this idea that before God created us, that he just sat down and wrote this cosmic rule book and decided, well, this is going to be right, and this is going to be wrong, and this is going to be right, and he's flipping a coin, I think this is going to be wrong. And that's not at all what sin is. As a matter of fact, biblically, sin is always relational. It's either something that breaks our relationship with God or it breaks our relationship with the people around us. This is why Jesus can say the most important commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and the second is just like it. love your neighbor as yourself. He says you can take the whole Old Testament and sum it up in those two lines. Why? Because sin is relational. Sin is when you don't love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, when you don't love your neighbor as yourself. And sometimes I've heard it said that love covering a multitude of sin is that sin doesn't matter, but that's not at all what he's saying in the book. He's saying sin matters a lot. And even when you go back to last week, we looked at this reality that Jesus doesn't say that he's going to worship you. In other words, he doesn't say, I'm going to listen to you about what's right or wrong. He says, no, there's a way that leads to life and a way that leads to death. And I'm going to constantly instruct you in that. I'm not going to just leave you in your brokenness. I don't want for you to experience that destruction. I don't want for the people around you to experience that destruction. But even in the midst of our brokenness and our ugliness, he values us. And he loves us. And that's why I think that an understanding of this, that sin covers a multitude of sins, it's tied back to what we've been talking about in Matthew chapter 11. And it's not that we just overlook sin. It's not that we don't care about loving people and making sure that we don't bring destruction into our relationship with God or people. But there's something that changes in our heart towards people when we begin to experience God valuing us this way. When we begin to experience being known and valued and loved. I think it changes the way that we value people. I think that we begin to value people the way that Jesus values us. You see, Jesus doesn't value you based on what you do. He doesn't value you based on your performance. Jesus values you based on who created you and the fact that he gave his life for you. He says you're valuable because you're created in the image of God, and you're valuable because Jesus gave his life for you. And it doesn't matter who you are. You were created in the image of God. And it doesn't matter what you've done. Jesus gave his life for you. He comes to us with an entirely different value system. And religion is constantly trying to work its way back in. And constantly trying to get us to value people based on their performance or based on their ideology or based on the way in which they live up to expectation. And sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll say, well, I'm not religious. I'm not a religious person. A couple months ago, I had a conversation with someone about this. I said, explain to me what you mean by that. And he talked to me, you know, I don't really believe in God, and I don't, so therefore I'm not religious. I said, well, religion's actually a lot bigger than that. Religion is a value system. Religion is the idea that you're valuable based on your performance. And so you may not follow a traditional religion where you value people based on morality. You may follow the religion of success, and so you value people based on promotion. Or maybe you follow the religion of wealth and you value people based on what they have. Or the religion of beauty and you value people based on how they look. Almost all of us live with religion, and religion is constantly trying to work its way back into our heart. You know the only way out of religion is Jesus? Listen to me carefully, because this is one of the really unique things that many people don't understand about Jesus. When Jesus comes to us, he brings to us a value that is outside of ourselves. Do you understand this? When Jesus comes to us, he doesn't bring to us a value system that's based on anything that we do. That's what grace is all about. This isn't going to be about you anymore. And the value that we have and why he values us, it's not based on us at all. It's based on who we were created by and who gave his life for us. You had no control over that. You didn't make that happen. You didn't earn it. It's outside of you, which allows for all of us to be valued equally. You see, Jesus is the way to be free of religion. And when you begin to experience him valuing that way, when you begin to experience him valuing you that way, It changes the way that you value people. And you stop seeing them as valuable based on what they have or don't have, what they do or don't do. You begin to understand, no, you're valuable because you were created in the image of God, and you're valuable because Jesus gave his life for you. It changes the way you value them. It brings gentleness. It brings gentleness into our lives. Have you ever met an older couple that has spent so much time together that you can barely tell them apart? They say the same things. They tell the same stories. Or maybe, have you ever met a child that talks exactly like their parent? So much so that it freaks you out. You hear them talking and you think the parent's talking, and you turn around and it's the child. When you experience the gentleness of Jesus in your life, when you come and you're valued by him in this way, that gentleness, it wears off. As a matter of fact, it can't actually be manufactured. When we live in religion, we try to manufacture it, and we tell ourselves, because the Bible says that we should be gentle, talks about the fruit of the Spirit being gentle, so we tell ourselves over and over again, you should be more gentle, you should be more gentle, you should be more gentle. But you can't manufacture it. It's the result of being with Jesus. It's one of those things that as you're around him and you experience his gentleness more and more and more and more, it wears off on you. And you're able to be gentle in the midst of people's brokenness. It brings humility. Jesus says, I'm gentle and humble at heart. It brings humility. Now let me ask you something. Jesus says that he's humble. Does that fit your definition of humility? For most of us, it doesn't, because for most of us, humility is, I'm aware of my faults. I'm humble. I'm aware of my faults. I'm aware of my weaknesses. I'm aware of my mistakes. When we say we're humble, that's what we mean. It means I'm aware of the fact that I'm not perfect. But then how does someone who's perfect be humble? What does he have to be humble about? I love the way that Warren says it. He says, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. We have a poor definition of humility, which is why it doesn't make sense to us when Jesus says, I'm humble. Humility is not when you think less of yourself. Jesus is not saying, I think low of myself. No, he understands who he is. He understands his perfection. He understands that. But what he's saying is, I'm not obsessed with myself. What he's saying is, you can come and be with me because I'm concerned about you. As a matter of fact, Philippians says that he's more concerned about you than he was about himself. You become humble. And in the midst of their brokenness, you don't concern yourself with how it impacts you. You're concerned about them. Most of the time when we get really mad at people, we get mad at them because they're screwing up our masks. We get mad at them because they're messing up our mask. And we have this mask that we're presenting to the world that we hide behind, that we want to be valued based on. And when someone steps into our lives and they mess up our mask, it makes us furious. I had a conversation with a guy a couple weeks ago. He was so mad because someone had made him late. He was so mad because someone had made him late. I said, why are you so mad? He said, I just value people and I value people's time. And I didn't say it to him because he was so angry, but I thought to myself, like, nothing in your life shows me that you value people. I don't think this is coming from there. And if you're constantly mad at people because they're making you late, because you value people, that doesn't make sense. We get really mad when people mess up our masks, when they keep us from being able to achieve what we need to achieve in order to be able to maintain the facade. This happens to parents. Kids constantly are working to destroy the masks of their parents. Constantly. And so you walk into a party and your child throws this epic tantrum. And you become furious, not because you're concerned about them, but you're messing up my mask. It usually happens right after you've been bragging about how much your child has grown. And then they break down. And in the moment, you're not concerned with them. You're concerned with you. You see, when you come and you experience Jesus knowing and valuing you, it brings humility because I don't have to maintain the mask anymore. So in the moment, I don't have to be concerned with how it impacts me or how it's going to affect me or how it makes me look. I can be concerned with them. How many times have you been in a conversation with someone that you're in a relationship with, and the whole time all you're thinking is, how does this make me look? What does this mean about me? See, when you experience his value based on who created you and who died for you, it begins to allow you to care much less about the mask, to allow it to begin to be destroyed, because you can be concerned about them. It brings mercy. Last week we talked about this passage just a little bit after this passage in Matthew chapter 11, where Jesus says, you would understand this if you understood that I desire mercy. You become merciful in those moments because you've tasted his mercy. See, Jesus doesn't just want to impact our relationship with him. He wants to impact our relationship with each other. And this thing that he started called the church is supposed to be a place where you can be known and valued, where you can be known and loved, not where sin is overlooked, but where in the midst of helping one another grow and develop, we value one another and we love one another. In the midst of the ugliness, there's gentleness and there's mercy. And typically when we have this conversation, we come to this point and then we begin to talk about, okay, do you feel like you can be known by them? Typically when we talk about being known and being known in community, we talk about, okay, do you feel like you can be known by them? Do you feel like you could walk in a dinner group and be known by them? And we talk about taking down the walls, and we talk about allowing people to see us for who we are, and we talk about confession, and that stuff is all really, really good. But I wonder if we're starting with the wrong question. And as I've processed this, and I'll be honest with you, I have wrestled with this conversation for weeks and weeks now. And part of what I continue to struggle with is I just didn't feel like this is where God had for us to start, because I wanted to talk about, well, how do we be known? But I just wasn't comfortable with it. And the more that I wrestled with it, the more that I began to come to a different understanding that maybe we're starting with the wrong question. And the question isn't, do I feel like I can be known by them? And the question isn't, do I feel like I can take down the guard and allow them to see me? What if the question isn't, do you feel like you can be known by them? And what if the question is, do they feel like they can be known by you? We typically come to it and ask, do I feel like I could trust them to take down the walls and allow them to see me? What if we're asking the wrong question? What if the question is, do they trust you enough to feel like they can take down the walls and allow you to see them? What if we've been starting from the wrong place? Let me ask you, do the people around you feel like they can be known by you? Does the person that you're in a relationship with feel like they can be known by you? Or do they feel like they have to hide? Do your friends feel like they can be known by you? Or do they feel like they need a mask? If they allowed you to see the ugliness and the brokenness, would they find value? Or would they find religion? Would you value them based on who created them and who gave his life for them? Or would you value them based on their performance? Would there be judgment? Would they find gentleness? Or would they find gossip? Would they find someone who's concerned about them, or would they find someone who's obsessed with what it means for you? Would they find mercy? The interesting thing is this. Even though we've just begun to talk about this, and even though for many of us, for the very first time, we're thinking about this, we live in this reality every day, and the people around you are constantly watching you to find out if they can be known by you, because we want to be known. Now, very few of us have found someone that we feel like we can be known by. Part of that is our own insecurities and fears, but part of that is the fact that very few of us are actually people that you would want to be known by. And the people around you are watching. And they're not so much paying attention to how you interact with them. They're watching for how you interact with other people. Because if I see that you get agitated at the ugliness and brokenness of other people, if I see that you're constantly angry with the ugliness and brokenness of other people, I will not allow you to see my ugliness and brokenness. This is one of the things that gossips oftentimes misunderstand. Because they think, well, I'm going to gossip about these people, but I'm going to be really close with these people. Doesn't work that way. A gossip isn't close with anyone, because no one wants to be known by a gossip. People may enjoy a gossip, and they may enjoy the companionship of a gossip, but they will not be known by them. And when I experience you talking to me about them, I know I will never let you know me. And when I experience that in every situation it's about you and how it impacts you, I'll never let you know me. Do the people around you feel like they can be known by you? What if we've started with the wrong question? And what if our understanding of what God has for us in this isn't found just in experiencing him valuing us? What if it's actually found in us learning to know and value others? There are many things on this journey that Jesus calls us into that can't be learned through information. They have to be learned through practice because they're so different than the way that we think and the way that we view the world. And in order for our mind to actually be transformed, we have to, in faith, practice them. Faith is not when you feel like something's true. Faith is when you act like something's true, even when you don't believe it. And there are many times where God calls us in faith to practice something that we don't actually feel like it's true in order for us to learn that it is true. And you're never going to learn it until you practice it. I'll give you an example. Jesus comes to us and says it's better to give than to receive. None of us believe that. None of us believe that. And you won't believe it, no matter how many times you hear it, until you practice it. You won't. And you can hear it over and over and over again. It's not learned that way. You have to, in faith, practice it. And when you practice it, all of a sudden you awaken to a deeper understanding and reality of the world. And you learn it. What if this is one of those things? What if our understanding of God valuing us this way, what if we only awaken to the fullness of it when we decide to be someone who knows and values people in the way that he knows and values us? To become someone that others feel they can be known by. What if it's in practicing it that we actually learn it? What if it's in practicing it that we actually awaken to the fullness of just how he's valued us? Of just how he knows and loves us? It's interesting because in my life, the people who hide the least are the people that I feel I can be most known by. The people who have understood best how God values them are the very same people that I feel I can be most known by. Maybe the depth of their understanding wasn't found in the information that they learned, but in them deciding to practice knowing and valuing and loving. To practice gentleness in those moments and mercy. What if the depth of our understanding is found in the practice? In our practice with those around us. Do they feel like they can be known by you? Do they feel like if they open up, that they'll be loved by you? You see, Jesus created the church to be this place where we could be known and valued and loved, not just by him, but by one another. Will you decide not to depend on them? And this is so important because one of the things that's important for us to realize about what Jesus is leading us into is that it's above circumstance. So throughout my life, I thought that if I was to experience the fullness of what Jesus was leading us into, that if I was experiencing, then the circumstances had to change. But the scriptures come to us with a different message. They come to us and say, listen, this is available to you whether you're slave or free, whether you're Jew or Greek. What the scriptures are saying is this is above circumstance. That's why the truth of the rest that Jesus wants to bring into our life, that's why it's just as true for us here as it is for the church who's meeting today in West Africa. It's just as true, even though the circumstances are drastically different. It's above circumstance. But if in order for us to experience the rest that Jesus has for us in relationships, if in order for that to happen, they have to change, then the circumstance has to change in order for me to find that rest. But what if we actually find the rest not by them changing, but by us changing? What if we actually find the rest, not by them becoming people that people feel they can be known by and valued by, but what if we actually find the rest by us becoming that person? Jesus is inviting you to come and to sit with him. He's inviting you to be known and valued by him. To experience the rest of his presence. To drink deeply his gentleness. To stand in awe of his humility. That he would be concerned about us. To drown in his mercy so that we might become people that others feel they can be known by and valued by so that we might truly be a community where you can be known and valued. Will you accept his invitation? May we become that community because we become more and more like him. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that as we engage this question of whether or not we are someone that others feel they could be known by, Father, I pray that you would spark in our heart a passion and a longing to be like Jesus. That this wouldn't be something, another thing that we have to do, another thing that we have to manufacture, that this wouldn't fall back into religion and performance, but that there would be a passion and a desire in our hearts to not just be known by you, but to become like you. To be someone who values people this way. To be someone who's gentle, to be someone who's humble, to be someone who's known by our mercy. Father, I pray that we would become that community because as individuals, we decide to become like you. We long for and we pursue becoming like you. We don't try to do it on our own, but we do it through coming over and over again, sitting, resting in your presence. Father, thank you for how you love us. Thank you for how you value us. And Father, I pray that the world might experience a taste of you through their experience of us. In Jesus' name.